Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of Movie Mastery, the show where we watch the movies that you've recommended to us. And I am your host, John. As always, my co-host is also here, Jeff.
Oh, I was worried you weren't going to introduce me. Whew, that was close. Hi.
Yeah, we really dodged a bullet on that one.
I thought you were just going to say, my co-host is also here. Anyway, the movie.
Anyway, we watched Hardcore Henry from 2015?
Is yes. That right? Okay.
Yeah, 2015. Jesus.
Yeah. You know what? That feels about right. I mean, this movie is ultimately just a big old experiment, and it feels like a 2015 era experiment.
Well, yeah. I mean, in case you don't know, the entire premise of the movie is it's all first person. So the whole movie is shot from one dude's point of view.
Yeah, and if you're wondering if that leads to a very specific type of film, yes, it does. It's basically just a video game with it where you don't get to make any decisions.
Now, before this movie came out, there was actually a few different little YouTube videos that were basically just proto runs at making this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing because if you go back and watch those, pretty much the whole thing is just like, hey, what if you first person viewed a dude doing parkour? And, you know, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's got a certain degree of neat to it.
However, I'm going to go ahead and say this. An hour and a half long movie where everything is from, like, the actual visual point of view of one person, and that person gets thrown around a lot, is not pleasant to watch.
No, it's mostly just visually disorienting.
Yeah, when the camera is continually spinning and bouncing and, you know, looking at random places while it's going, like, jumping around, you're like, okay, shaky cam was bad enough. This is just real, real bad.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's barf-inducing in a lot of situations. In keeping with the name, it is an aggressively R-rated movie with a lot of horrifying body destruction happening on screen. So between the shaky cam and the gross shit, it's a lot like the experience of watching Cloverfield. So if you've got a squeamish tummy in any capacity, I can't recommend watching this on a large screen.
No, definitely not. Honestly, even on a small screen, I'm like, I would occasionally have to just sort of let my eyes drift away from the screen just to be like, I gotta not be looking at this anymore.
Yeah, that's pretty close to my experience as well. I think I paused it just because Sage woke up because I was trying to watch it during her nap. But I probably would have made it through because it's not that long. And really, the thing about this movie is the gimmick is that it's, you know, a first-person action movie. So remember that one scene from 2009's Doom? What if that was the whole fucking thing? But more realistically, it's just a showcase for Charlton Copley to do a lot of characters.
I mean, yes. We'll get into that when we do the whole spoilers. But honestly, motherfucker is the only thing that remotely saves this movie.
Yeah, because it's just Charlton. You know, normally when I see Charlton Copley, I'm like, I'm not in for a good time. Because he's in every movie where gross shit happens constantly. Even District 9 is still kind of a stomach-churning experience.
Well, yeah.
But his performance in this is definitely part of that. But at least he's having a whole lot of fun and doing a lot of cool shit.
Yeah, I gotta say, the non-spoiler review of this is, it is difficult to watch, like, actually difficult to watch, and not really worth it.
Yeah, and, you know, not for nothing, but it's a movie where the only female character is a heartless villain, and the only other women in the movie are topless.
I mean, yes, that is definitely a thing I was gonna bring up.
Yeah, that's just probably worth pointing out.
Oh,
so there you go.
Yeah, let's go ahead and play a little music. We're going to come back and then we will do our full in-depth spoiler times review of Hardcore Henry. Welcome back. Time to really dive into the Henry Hardcore movie.
Yep. I'm ready to get into it. And, you know, we might as well start at the beginning because the beginning is some kids threatening the first person camera Henry character They don't say anything. They're just going to destroy his toy robot.
Yeah, it's basically just a first-person slow-mo, hey, we're bullies, and then they throw his toy against a wall. Like, that's it. And then, you know, Tim Roth shows up and calls our main character a pussy, so that's great.
I mean, ultimately, Tim Roth's performance in this, sadly, is a bait and switch, because he pops up and is like, you little pussy. And you're like, oh, okay, so this is going to be one of the rage-inducing things that makes our main guy so hardcore. But no, about 45 minutes into the movie, he'll finish the sentence. Is what
you little pussy is what I would say.
Yeah, is what me dad used to call me. I'll never call you a pussy, Henry, you little pussy.
God, that was so bad.
Yeah.
That made me just so angry that they were like, oh, yeah, no, we're just going to go ahead and be like, no.
It's just such a dumb clip, like a little bait and switch of a thing.
And it's like, there's no resolution with that, that you're like, oh, and this is what he needed to do, whatever, like remembering that this happened, because that doesn't matter.
Well, there's a point, like, it's the point in the movie, the same point in the movie where we reveal that it's a bait and switch and he wasn't actually calling the main character a pussy, is also the point where we learn that Henry's motivation is that he won't be bullied anymore, because we have to watch the same scene again, basically. But it feels completely pointless. And honestly, it's interesting because one of my favorite things about this movie is also what I think feels like one of my least favorite things, which is that there's no explanation. We don't know fucking who Tim Roth is or what his relationship to this kid is. Nothing. But I mean,
it's his dad.
Is it his dad? Did they say that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because, well, Tim Roth, when he goes past the little pussy line later, is, son, that's what my dad called me, but I won't call my kid that. So,
okay.
You know.
I guess that's fair.
It's his dad.
Yeah, all right. But there's a lot of things about this movie that just aren't said, and I appreciated that. Like, I mean, spoiler alert, the villain has superpowers that just go unmentioned.
I mean, it's very weird. This is supposed to be set in Russia, I would assume, in the future, because we don't get an establishing date, but there are a lot of, like, high-tech things going on that seem fairly commonplace as far as what their availability is. We also get a skyline where there's some very obviously CGI high-tech buildings.
Yeah, but of course, because it's a physically filmed stunt movie, those skyline images and super futuristic locations pretty much always just boil down to hallways in which dudes get shot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, given that this started out on YouTube as, like, this guy's look what I can do with parkour stuff, of course, the fact that it takes place in future Russia just means, oh, it technically does, so that we can have some MacGuffins, but mostly I will be jumping from grimy wall to grimy wall.
Yeah, like all the important shit in the movie either happens in fields, on regular-ass Russian streets, or in disgusting abandoned hospitals. So the fact that it's set in the future is mostly just sort of an off justification for why the villain has powers and why our hero doesn't go like, wait, how am I a cyborg? What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's basically just a big hand-wavy bit where we're like, all right, this guy, our main villain,
Akan,
is, I keep wanting to say Akon, but that's a rapper, and I shouldn't say that.
And it is actually Akan. Like, they refer to him as Akan all the time. Redeemable for five cents.
So, Akan is our main villain, who is just sort of one of those villains that loves being a villain. Just, you know, if he loves his job, he's never going to work a day in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And he has essentially telekinesis.
Yeah.
As a super. And I think it's supposed to be tech-based?
Yeah, well, it makes a noise. I think it's supposed to be if you were to actually slow down the movie for a second, which, frankly, I'm really glad they didn't, he'd probably be like, oh, yeah, I have implants in my hands that let me control electromagnetic waves, Henry, or something like that. And thankfully, yeah, they just don't do that. He just is telekinetic, and sometimes it gives him a nosebleed, full stop, and I actually really like that.
The weird thing to me, though, is the main plot of this is that Akan wants an army of cyborg super soldiers.
Yeah, he wants an army of Henrys, yeah.
That's fine. Basically, Henry is the prototype for this. And I couldn't help but spend the entire time going, yeah, but why not just have an entire army of telekinetic super soldiers. That seems real useful.
I assume it was a failsafe on his part because it was the only way he could keep these things from killing him when they went rogue inevitably. Like, it didn't work, obviously, because he's the bad guy in an action movie, but, like, he's got to be, I'm the only one who has this superpower. That way I've got a failsafe in case shit goes wild.
I guess.
But, yeah, you're right. I mean, ultimately, a lot of this movie's plot revolves around, let's just do a cool stunt sequence. So, you know, the movie starts with our after the little introductory sequence, our hero, Henry, waking up, like, broken on a table, and a woman comes by to kind of do some generic repair on him and installs a cybernetic arm and screws a leg onto him.
Yeah. At this point, we're like, oh, okay, we're not getting anything, but he doesn't have a voice module yet, and according to them, his memory has not come back yet, but she's like, hey, Henry, I'm your wife, I love you, we were married, and I'm gonna try and save you after the unspecified accident you're in.
Yes, and then, you know, there's a whole bunch of setup where they walk him past a couple of other scientists, and they're joking around about giving him a voice, and blah, 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 and then the building gets raided by Akan, who immediately murders one of the other scientists and does a whole bunch of menacing, creepy villain crap.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for as disorienting and nonsensical as most of the is, at least the actor who's doing Akan is hamming it up he is on screen.
Yeah, he's very good. I mean, he's a Russian actor, just like almost everybody else in this, but he has made it across because he's in that Vikings show.
Yeah, Danila Kozlovsky.
Yeah, he plays Oleg on that Viking show. So he's very, very good. And, I mean, granted, in this movie, he's playing a hammy, long, white-haired villain who's always kind of at a Dutch angle and saying things like, Henry, I'm going to fuck your wife, Henry, kind of shit. So, but yeah, the thing I was like, okay, are we ever getting an explanation for this sequence and why they're, like, scaring Henry out of the building? Is this just a test of his systems? What are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, we do, I guess, you know, spoiler alert, in the end, find out that this is all bullshit.
Yeah, everything's bullshit.
everything's fucking bullshit anyway.
Well, everything that happens until the last 5 minutes of the movie is fucking wheels within wheels. I was planning for that kind of bullshit. So, yeah. But I'm still not sure why.
Well, the whole idea is, I mean, fuck it, I don't care. We're already in the spoiler part of the review. So it turns out that the woman who says that Henry and her are married, Estelle, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Is actually married to Akan, and the whole reason that they are doing this is because they need to create the base memories to then upload to the later, basically lobotomized versions of Henry.
I mean, I kind of get that, but on the other hand, they don't, when they finally do that, because that, you know, again, spoiler alert, the end of this movie is Henry fighting an army of almost Henrys, but they don't give them any memories beyond the point where she's like, I'm your wife, Henry, so why didn't they just disable him at that point?
Well, I mean, you have to assume, one, that they do not have a disable Henry button, or else they would have pressed that very early on.
Well, yeah, you gotta think that's their first mistake they made. Like, whoops, forgot to put in a disable Henry button.
But I think it was, one, they needed sort of base memories to get to sort of establish, oh, is this going to be a powerful enough motivator for, like, oh, will Henry follow her commands, whatever she says?
I guess that's fair.
Then also, I think the fact why they let him escape and then go after him is, let's also get a test of his capabilities.
Well, and the other thing, this is a big part of it, this part where Akan, invades the blimp, spoiler alert again, they're on a blimp, they don't find out until nearly the end, it's part of the stunt sequence, it feels really like it is a raid, like Akan actually does raid this building and murder people, and even if Estelle is in on it, it's still like an actual raid where other people got murdered and stuff.
Yep.
Although the fact is the movie's not really about the story. The movie's about the stunt sequences.
Oh yeah. I mean, this movie is just, let's move from one interesting thing to look at to another and then not show you that thing clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you still do more or less get a basic idea of at least what's going on. It's not like the whole movie is done through obscured, like, Dutch angles and slow-mo and shit where you can't even tell what the fuck is actually happening. Like, it tells a cohesive story, it just doesn't bother with a lot of the background details. And there's part of that that I actually kind of respect.
I mean, I feel like you can fill in most of the blanks that you get here. I mean, we don't really get any idea of who, even by the end of the movie, Henry actually was.
No, you're right. The only memory we have of Henry that we ever see is that's a real memory for sure is the whole Tim Roth you little pussy thing.
Oh yeah, I mean, we get a few flashes of like a beach and a bridge and a few like, oh, these are the cues for the audience that he's getting his memory back.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't find out like, okay, but who was this person before he woke up on a table turning into a cyborg?
Yeah. Anyway, he gets chased around the blimp by Akan because he manages to like hit Akan with a glass something or other and then run away. And he's got Estelle with him. And then the two of them escape on like a really cool escape pod thing because it turns out, oh shit, they're in a fucking really high altitude blimp.
I did like that shot. That was a good, especially from first person, actually using that gimmick as a good thing is, you know, you're running through this whole facility that you assume is just some lab somewhere.
Yeah, you see an emergency exit.
Yeah, he gets to the exit, pushes the door open, and then almost falls from, you know, a flying blimp. And you're like, oh, that's a really neat shot to go from like, I'm running through a hallway to, oh my God, I'm hanging on and looking down at like clouds.
Yeah, because they're way up above the clouds. This is definitely a future tech blimp because it's got a ridiculously high altitude ceiling and because it's huge on the inside.
I mean, honestly, I don't even know if we see it and it's a blimp or if it's just like a helicarrier.
No, it's definitely a blimp. There's a scene when they're falling in the escape pod, they look up for a second and for just a split second, because this escape pod is literally accelerating downwards. Like there's jets on top of it. You can see that there's a blimp instantly receding into the distance.
All right.
Trust me, I always pause for airplane shots.
Oh, no. I will 100% trust your memory when it comes to flying objects and nothing else.
That's fair. Very fair. Yeah. they tumble in for a landing that's like way too fast. Like it's a dangerous landing that looks like it ought to kill both of them. Which, again, I'm still like, how is Estelle in on this? She's doing some crazy, dangerous, fatal shit.
Yeah, I mean, I have to assume that she didn't think that the escape pod would fuck up in such a way.
I'm wondering if she didn't get bought out off screen, like, early in the movie, as opposed to she was in on it the whole time.
Oh, no, she was definitely in on it the whole time. Like, she is married to Akan and was designing this, and it was her idea to do the like implant them with my identity as a wife.
Right. Well, in any event, you know, they land and she's unconscious, so he picks her up and starts carrying her, and then a whole bunch of vans show up, and good lord, this black A-team van gets so much use in this movie. There's like 80 of these fucking things,
which, you know, sure, at least you can easily identify the bad guys, so that's nice.
Yeah, but it's very much that. It's mostly just like we had this van, and it's really cheap and efficient to just use this van over and over again.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, he manages to escape, although Estelle is captured.
Mm-hmm.
And we are introduced to the first of Sharlto Copley's many characters, Jimmy.
Yeah, just Sharlto Copley plays Jimmy in this movie, and there are like about a dozen Jimmys, and they're all Sharlto Copley.
Yeah. So we get our first Jimmy here where he's like, hey, you got to come with me and I'm going to get you out of here. Turns out your battery's real low, so you need to get charged up. I mean, maybe that was their idea, was they would let him escape, run around, see what he could do, but then he would die in 20 minutes because that's where his battery pack was at.
That's a good point. He did have a very low battery pack. And who could have expected that a Jimmy would show up at this moment?
Yeah.
So this is our first Jimmy is basically a cool super spy Jimmy, where he has like, you know, suspenders, but in that sexy way where Daniel Craig in that detective movie Knives Out, and like his tie tucked in between the buttons of his shirt. The cool sexy super spy Jimmy shows up, and the two of them fight their ways through some thugs and then escape in a car and then get chased by more thugs because that's this kind of movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, basically, anytime we aren't describing something that's going on in this movie, assume that Henry is being chased by thugs.
Mm-hmm. He is constantly either being chased by or murdering thugs at all times.
Yeah, that's basically this movie outside of the moments where he is talking to Jimmy about stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty much those are the pause breaks, and then it's right back to thugs.
Yeah.
Well, in this pause break, Jimmy doesn't give him much more than, hey, you've only got about 20 minutes before you completely collapse, your battery's dead, I'm going to tell you how to fix it. Oh shit, I just got shot in the head. You have to run around some more.
And that was very interesting, because, you know, when you're first watching this and you don't know anything, you're like, oh damn, they really used up fucking Copley, like, immediately. Wow, all right. He had, like, 5 minutes of screen time.
Yeah, yeah. So he gets shot through the head, dies, and right away we're back to running around on the street trying to escape a bunch of A-Can's thugs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he does. I don't really want to describe action here, because it's mostly just your standard action movie action, but from first person.
Well,
the
one cool thing here is that these early shots of Henry... He's scared and he's not confident, and he keeps getting the shit kicked out of him over and over again. But by the end, he seems to have more or less unlocked all of his video game character powers.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, he's also, you know, his battery is low. He's having little malfunctions in his vision that are like, oh, you can tell that he's got robo eyes because he's having like glitches in the screen.
Yeah. Well, he...
But
fights and fights and fights and escapes and escapes and escapes and eventually runs into another Jimmy on a bus.
Yeah, this is homeless Russian guy Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. Homeless Russian Jimmy is like, oh, I'm Jimmy, you know, because he's all like, he's managed to scare everyone else off the bus by being so homeless and nasty.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, it's me, it's your pal Jimmy. I've gotta get you to like a place to kill Slick Dimitri. He also has a cyborg heart pump thing that you need to juice yourself up. So you're going to need to go find this person you've never heard of before and just punch into their chest and rip out their heart.
It does have one of the jokes in the movie. Has a couple of very good little bits of comedy in it. And this is one of them where he's like, you're going to need to pull out his heart, right? And eat it. There's this break, and he's like, oh, I'm just kidding. You got to plug it in on this potty, right?
Yeah. You just need the pump out of it. It's fine.
But then the flamethrower super soldier, who is a recurring villain in the film, pops up outside wearing his bizarre jacket of, like, it just kind of looks like, what was the name of Bishop's primary villain on the X-Men? I want to say Kilroy.
I don't know.
I want to say it was Kilroy, but he had like this super shield that looked like it was made out of fractured triangles, and that's what this guy's jacket is.
Oh, yeah. And the flamethrower guy, of course, manages to flamethrow into the bus. Henry gets a little fire on him, but manages to douse it, and Jimmy number two dies on fire.
Yeah, yeah, and he's like, oh, I'll catch up with you later, which is really trying to set you up for the, okay, it's not that this guy's, you know, the headshot was fake or anything, it's that this guy just keeps dying.
Yeah.
But now we do the raid on Slick Dimitri, and it's just, hey, this is a building full of thugs, and you have to get in there and kill the main thug.
Yep, and it's just an excuse for some parkour, because he's like, ooh, they've got bad guys out front of this building, so I can't go in through the front. I'll have to use my sweet powers of parkour to, I don't know, jump from window ledge till I find an open window.
Yeah. And luckily, this character has, like, super strong hands. We've seen him have a cyborg hand attached. But basically, we're going to find out through the course of the film that he's mostly cyborg. Like,
I mean, it's weird, because what we see is mostly just he's got cyborg eyes, we know.
Yeah.
And he's definitely got at least one cyborg arm and one leg. And I kept thinking, man, just one arm and one leg, even if you've got, say, a cyber-reinforced, like, spine and body, is still just going to be... The first time someone hits you in a part that isn't a cyborg, you're going to be like, oh, fuck.
But we do eventually see, like, a skin off camera trick showing him what he looks like nowadays. And he's basically he looks like a T-800.
Yeah.
He's got more, everything's metal now. He's all metal and carbon fiber parts and so on, covered with a layer of skin.
Yeah.
And the one time you see him.
I do want to mention.
Yeah, go ahead.
By the way.
Please do.
Since we're talking about the action stuff that's going on in here. I wanted to bring up just some generic thoughts on this.
Please. I feel like this isn't a movie where we need to do a blow-by-blow, because the blow-by-blow would be really boring.
Yeah. Now, I understand the sort of idea behind at least the YouTube videos of doing the parkour stuff and being like, oh, you know, look at this first-person camera view of me doing rad stuff. Isn't it, you know, super disorienting for you to look down from a super big height that I just climbed to. And you're like, okay, that's kind of, but honestly, as I was watching this movie, I was like, I feel like I would enjoy this far more without the gimmick, because I feel like it would look more impressive watching someone actually do this parkour stuff than having a camera jerkily, like, look around while this guy is jumping from ledge to ledge.
It's funny, because I feel like, you're not wrong, you're absolutely right, and the only things I really knew about this movie going into it were watching a couple of, like, documentaries about the making of it to let us know that, oh no, this is all physical stunts, this is actually a guy with a camera strapped to him, because otherwise it could very easily just be a camera that someone's moving around, and then they went in and digitally added arms and legs flailing.
Yeah, no, but that was the whole gimmick with this, is it's like, here's a parkour guy that wears a camera on his face so you can feel what it's like to be the parkour guy.
But there are occasionally moments where the whole first person thing very much shines. And generally it's just when he's like falling off of stuff or coming to huge surprises and so on. But I mean, you're not wrong. If this was more a little more like The Raid, for example, or really, let's call it like it is and say what the actual visual inspiration for the vast majority of this movie is. If it was one of the Crank movies, then
yep.
Then you're right. It would have a little bit more of a kinetic feel to it than just sort of an arm appears from the left of the screen and grabs a guy by the nose and then bullets go off.
Yeah, there's just so much that in this movie, it's why I had to call out the scene where he like opens the door on the blimp and almost falls out, because, you know, like you said, when you're looking down at something or get surprised by something, the first person gimmick works. But yeah, when he's doing his like, I'm jumping around from like different floors of this abandoned building, or I'm jumping to ledge, or I'm running across like the side of the bridge, there are a few decent little shots in there, but mostly I'm like, if you pulled back and I actually watched a person do these stunts, it would be so much more impressive to me.
I think part of it also for me was that maybe this is just me because I have a really strong fear of heights, right? Especially mm-hmm. in person and in cars. I can fly just fine, but visceral heights scare the shit out of me. So the blimp scene got me real good. And then when I realized that they were going to be going onto the roof of a building for the final melee, the burly brawl of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, shit, a lot of people are going off that roof. And maybe...
Oh, and I definitely would say that's another point where I was like, oh, the first person thing for when he like climbs up one of those antenna towers on the top of tall buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And that is another one of those things where I'm like, this is a great use of the first person shot, because the like looking down from that perspective is one of those things where you're like, oh, that point of view is a very interesting looking point of view. But, you know, the point of view of I'm sitting in a chair looking at someone's titties, you're like, I didn't need to get that from a first person perspective.
Yeah, that sequence I felt like didn't take advantage of the setting as much as it could, because it was set up like way super high. I was fully expecting to see like a lot more teetering shots on the edge of the building as people are hanging from the edge or as they go flying off into the distance. I think of the 50 or so dudes he has to fight up there, he kicks maybe one of them off the building. And I was like,
yeah, there aren't a lot of off the building deaths.
Yeah, which I was surprised by, because I figured, okay, obviously the big thing you're going to be going for if you're doing a first person shooter movie is visceral gut reactions of having to see dizzying heights or terrifying movements or scary shit coming right at your face like it's a 3D movie.
Oh, yeah. And I figured that with the end fight on a roof, there would be at least one point where he almost gets knocked off and has to like hold on to the edge of the building and like looks down, like have one of those shots.
Yeah, that's more or less what I was expecting and was surprised not to necessarily see. But of course, that's because at that point in the movie, they had given up any pretense of this thing being like a balletic thing. And it was just him ripping dudes apart for almost a third of the movie.
Oh, yeah. God, that last scene goes on.
Anyway, he does indeed manage to capture and murder Slick Dimitri. It takes him... He has to fight his way up a building. Then Dimitri turns out to also have a cyborg body, so he's quite dangerous. The two of them fight. Dimitri tries to run away. He chases him down and I think kills him by pulling something down on top of him or whatever. It doesn't matter. He gets the little upgrade thing and installs it in himself, and now he's got some more power and time.
Well, I mean, technically he doesn't install it. That leads us to
another
the stripper scene.
Right, okay, that's right. There's another Jimmy scene. Yeah, so he manages to get away with the heart thing, but is collapsing, and that's when he, like, gets a cell phone that tells him where to go.
Oh, yeah, because he is, of course, being chased by thugs again, mm-hmm. because I think the way he gets Dimitri's thing is, like, Dimitri's head gets blown off because the Akan thugs are after him. Just sort of shoot Dimitri while trying to shoot him.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
But he needs to have Jimmy's help to do this, and so it's up to Jimmy to help him, but now we're going to find Cokehead Jimmy.
Right. And I don't want people thinking that I half-assed watching this movie or I have forgotten everything from it. It's just that 99.9% of the movie is murdering and dismembering thugs.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I mean, the fact that we took an extra day to record this, I was like, you know, I definitely want to take an extra day to record this, but honestly, this movie has so little to hold on to plot-wise that, like, there's going to be a point where when you look back on it, you're like, I remember a lot of bullets and punching. I don't really remember a whole lot else.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that I've forgotten all of the movie. I actually kind of like this film when we get to the end. But ultimately, the individual story beats are very hard to remember because 90% of them are Henry finally gets a hold of somebody and that guy's head pops like a grape. And now we're in another scene.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, the Jimmys in this movie are basically the strands that hold this all together.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those scenes are like the, here's plot happening, and here's an actual character that you can, like, hold on to, given that we've decided to make Henry just this complete fucking tabula rasa.
Yeah, yeah. Jimmy is basically the movie's metronome. Every once in a while, you think you're off beat, and you're not sure what's happening, and he's just murdering thugs, or thugs are trying to murder him, or something. And then here comes a Jim, and you're like, okay, I'm back on the ship. The ship has been righted.
Yeah, Charlto gets to show up and be a different version of Jimmy. This is great. In the, like the, I don't know, strip club, brothel, whatever it is that they are in.
It's both.
Yeah. We get Cokehead Jimmy, who then freaks out and is like, I can't do this. And then we get Nerd Jimmy shows up.
Luke Wilson looking Jimmy. Who knew that if you cleaned up Charlto Copley, he turned into Luke Wilson? That's Owen Wilson. He also turns into Owen Wilson. He's a triple changer. He can turn into a train, a spaceship,
he's a triple threat.
Oh, please. Our couple of Transformers fans just went nuts. By that, I mean our fans who are Transformers.
Yes. We have a very big listener base on Cybertron.
We do, yeah. We're enjoyed by, I don't know, Cup? I think there's one called Scup or Cup. And RC? That RC likes us a lot. And Jazz.
Yeah.
I'm exhausting my non-Optimus Prime list of Transformers I know about. That's fucking lies. I know a million of them.
Yeah, please.
So,
how dare you pretend?
I know. I can name a bunch of them. Fine. I'm not going to, but I could.
Good.
So yeah, Cokehead Jimmy is the one who summoned him here, but he's gotten way too high on coke because he's in a strip club brothel thing, and he's surrounded by... I have to assume that Jimmy is just generically independently wealthy because he's surrounded by like 11 prostitutes.
Yeah. And, you know, also has an absolute fuck ton of coke. So, you know.
And guns.
Just plenty to throw around.
Yeah. He's just got money to burn. No big deal. This scene features the only other women besides the bad one. The bad guy lead villain one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, given that this movie is like, what do you have? We have the wife that turns out to be like, oh, I'm a manipulator, and I was just doing this to, like, screw you over, and,
I actually like okay, this great. Other guy. Let me talk about his dick. And it was like, okay, I
get you have ex-wife problems,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, apparently.
And then a bunch of, strippers / prostitutes in a brothel, and then two women, one has, like, a gun and one has a katana, that work or own this place?
Yeah, it's entirely unclear who these two are. They are disposable. They are there to look badass for about 5 seconds and then get shot, or one of them gets into a motorcycle crash. But yeah, I honestly had forgotten they were even in the movie.
Oh yeah, well I mean, it's basically just, oh, here's some badass ladies. Don't worry, I think their names are like Katja and something else.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry, they're just there to be, I don't know, sexy and badass, and then also one of them is in a relationship with Hippie Jimmy?
Yeah, yeah. Although that might just be a temporary thing. Who knows?
Who could possibly know?
It doesn't matter. This scene features, yeah, Cokehead Jimmy can't deal. He flips out and runs out of the room to send in Luke Wilson-looking Jimmy, right down to the sweater vest. And in the interim, the prostitutes all giggle, and one of them puts this bloody, broken, dying man's hand on her boob, and they're all like, hee hee hee, look at that, ha ha ha, and that's their full extent of characterization.
Yep, it's absolutely wonderful. But then he doesn't love that.
Yep, but then Akan's goons show up. And we need
and
to have...
also Akan.
Oh yeah, Akan's in this scene too. And we have a nasty shootout, and Luke Wilson looking Jimmy immediately dies.
Oh no, Luke Wilson Jimmy is still around. He runs the fuck away.
No, he doesn't.
Cokehead Jimmy dies.
He grabs a gun and jumps out in front and is like, I'm gonna save you, and then just immediately gets vented. Like, he doesn't even get a shot off.
That's not true.
Yeah, it is. Cokehead Jimmy's the one who survives. Remember, he's the one who's that woman's girlfriend and your boyfriend, and you don't find out
until... That's Hippie Jimmy.
Is Hippie Jimmy different than Cokehead Jimmy?
Yes.
I thought those were the same Jimmy.
No.
All right. Well, I'm still going to maintain that Luke Wilson Jimmy gets completely vented. Like, because he's like, I'll buy you some time. And then he absolutely fails to buy them any time.
The I'll buy you some time line is at the end of the...
There's more than one I'll buy you some time. There's several I'll buy you some times.
There is not.
There's like five I'll buy you some times.
There is one buy you some time. It is with the nerd Luke Wilson Jimmy, but it is at the end of the movie.
Okay. Anyway, they escape on... No, they don't escape. Akan gets away, and they're pursuing him.
Yeah, because...
They think he's kidnapped, yeah.
The wife, and so they're like, we gotta go get him?
Yeah, they think that... They have to go catch him because they think that he's kidnapped the wife character. And he is really sticking to this... really, really sticking to this charade of this wife is actually your wife and stuff. Like... They set up a prison that she has to hang out in on one of these battle trucks that
it's
they're chasing.
It's very strange.
Like, what are you doing? What is all this?
Also, my dude, you have telekinesis. Why aren't you just, like, absolutely wrecking this dude's shit if you don't want him to still be around?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of sequences here. Because most of the telekinesis that this guy does in the movie is just sort of, if anything gets near him, he shoves it away again.
Well, he does a lot of, like, I'm going to lift a thing and hold it in the air.
No, I know. He does other stuff, but the majority of what he does is when stuff gets near him, he goes, ah, and just kind of flings it backwards. He also hovers and breaks people's backs by dropping them, and at one point he can fly. But for the most part, he just sort of shoves folks around, which left me wondering why, when he's being pursued by Henry on a motorcycle, he doesn't just, like, use telekinesis to push the motorcycle over.
Yeah, but no. I don't, I again...
I don't think he can. There's got to be a reason why he fakes that this woman is, like, in a prison on this truck to get rescued. So it's not just that he could kill Jimmy at any point, or sorry, Henry at any point, and doesn't. If he doesn't want to, obviously, because otherwise why would he create a fake prison cell for Estelle to have to stand in?
I mean, part of me is wondering... Are they uploading all of this so that, like, whole, like, drive to save my wife and how important seeing her be kidnapped and all that is also uploaded so that, like, the new super soldiers who don't have memories and also are semi-lobotomized are just like, oh, the only thing I know is that this is my wife and I need to, like, protect her?
Yeah, I'm wondering if... Like, it's interesting to me because they're like, we desperately need these real memories of this crazy, dangerous shit to happen. And also, the bad guy in the false memories we're creating to upload them needs to be the guy who's in charge of these robots. That's very important. You think they just create a fake bad guy for them to all hate so that Akan could, like, hang around near his robot army and not have them constantly trying to murder him?
Yeah, it's very weird because the end of the movie is like, he says that he wanted them all to be extremely loyal to Estelle? Who would be able to, like, tell them to do anything and go anywhere, and they would follow commands blindly. And I'm like, man, that seems like a really bad plan for, like, a big bad evil mastermind to be like, I'm gonna make an entirely undefeatable murder army, and they're only going to listen to someone else.
Also, they hate me. Every one of them professionally and genetically hates me.
It's just a weird choice.
Yeah, it's unusual. Anyway, more thugs, more thugs, more thugs. He rescues Estelle here, but then immediately loses her again because he loses power when Akan comes into the truck where he's rescued Estelle and flings him around enough to kind of shut him down.
And at this point, it's just like, oh, hey, don't move or I'll kill your wife.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's some shit with her panties, like, that matters.
It's all just like, hey, I'm going to hit you with a baseball bat.
Oh, that's right. He has a pretty funny line there about how, like, over a million baseball bats are sold every year in Russia. Also 50 baseballs.
Yeah. He's like, this is Russia's true pastime.
Do you get it?
Yeah. But then we get to meet Sniper Jimmy out in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Who leads him to the...
No, wait, it's Hippie Jimmy
base
first.
Of Jimmy.
Isn't it Hippie Jimmy first?
No, Hippie Jimmy was the one on the bike.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry. Because I'm tying this into my one of my favorite scenes in the movie, which is the part where he gets thrown out of an airplane or disconnected from a helicopter he tries to catch and hang on to towards the end of this whole chase sequence, and then falls in, like, tries to fall in a lake but misses and falls in a tree.
Yes.
You remember all that shit? Like, it's after he gets kicked out of the convoy, he wakes up, a tank starts chasing him, he manages to kill everyone in the tank, and then a military helicopter starts chasing him. He gets a hold of the military helicopter, they drop him because Akan is in it, and then he tries to ride a horse and can't ride a horse.
Yeah, the entire trying to ride a horse scene was a very amusing gag.
It was my favorite part of the whole film.
You know, a horse shows up and he's like, oh, easy, easy. And, like, they start playing the, you know, standard Western.
Dun, 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 whichever show that was from.
Yeah, and so he gets on the horse and then it immediately knocks him off and runs away.
Yeah, it's a great thing. They're like, ah, finally, we've entered the scene where he has a mount. That's a regular first-person character thing, right? And it's just like, no, fuck you. You don't know how to ride a horse. Also,
this horse has no saddle and does not like you. Goodbye.
Also, let's face it. You're 90% carbon fiber and metal. You're probably weigh like 650 pounds.
Yeah, this horse is like, nah, thank you.
Nah, fuck you, buddy. Now, this is when he finds his way to some building and is met by Sniper Jimmy.
Yeah, Sniper Jimmy leads him to the Tower of Jimmy, which is an old abandoned hospital that's all super run down so that they can, you know, have a cool fight scene in it.
Yeah, and we meet the actual Jimmy, the original Jimmy, Jimmy Basic, who is a dude who used to work for Akan until Akan got mad at him and snapped his spine.
Yeah, so he created a entire interface for himself where he can mentally control grown sort of clone versions of himself.
Mm-hmm. He's got a whole army of meat
clones. Each one is different.
Yeah, they're all very different. They have different personalities, accents, wants, and needs, but they are, in fact, all the same guy.
Yeah, it's very much a multiple man situation where his multiples have been away for too long.
I find it amusing because he's like, look, I've been living a lot of lives. I've made a lot of different me's so I can experience all kinds of different facets of human civilization and so on. And I'm like, okay, but why did you make a World War I guy?
Why did you make a British World War I general as, like, a dude? Because he's like, oh, these all are, you know, different aspects of my own personality. So we've got, like, a scientist nerd guy and, like, a punk rock dude and, you know, a guy who's super into chicks and drugs. You know, my peace-loving guy and also this World War I general.
Yeah, and the World War I general, let's face it, is the best one of all the clones. He's far and away the coolest one, but it's very much like this is the bonus secret character in this video game, as you can play as this World War I dude who exists for no reason. He's a World War I British man in some time in the future of Cyber Russia.
It's great. I love it.
I also, it leads to a lot of backup questions like, okay, why did you make a homeless one? How often did you go and be the homeless one?
How often was that, would you say?
Oh, I want to make the stinkiest, nastiest version of myself possible and have it bother people on the bus. And yeah, that seems like the sort of thing that I might do, but...
Well, I mean, when you get to the point where you're like, well, I can experience anything. You're like, I may as well experience being a weird guy on a bus. That sounds fun.
Also, it calls into question what's going on with Cokehead Jimmy. When he's puppeting the meathead suit, does he get high off the coke that Cokehead Jimmy does? Or how are we doing that?
I believe so. I believe he can feel, because they're like actual clones and not robots.
It's a full body interface.
Can actually feel everything. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's just sitting somewhere in his wheelchair high off his fucking ass. Do you think he immediately sobers up if he takes the helmet off, or does it stay with him?
Oh, yeah. because he's not connected to that body anymore. Yeah. His body isn't, you know, filled with coke.
Anyway, obviously, this scene's an exposition dump. We learn that Akan's a bad guy with a super plan. We learn that Jimmy has been helping him because he also hates Akan for unrelated reasons. We learn about the battery pack and that Jimmy is mostly, or that Henry is mostly robot. And, you know, just to punctuate it and let Charlton Copley have his moment of comedy, they do a musical number of all the currently surviving Jimmys.
Yeah, they do a I've Got You Under My Skin with a bunch of the various Copley clones.
Yep.
And it's very cool because it's done as, you know, it's made to look as all one continuous shot where, like, one falls down and the other stands up and it's just, you know, all of these various Jimmys are continually popping in and out of the scene. And it's a very well done thing, but it made me think through this that I was like, man, one of the things I assumed going in was when they were like, oh yeah, we're going to do it all from first person. It's all actually like a dude wearing a camera. That's what this movie is. And it's very Crank-esque.
Yeah, this is very much a CG showcase in the middle of an all-stunt movie.
Well, the thing is, I thought going into it, it was going to be the gimmick, not just that it was all first person, but all one continuous shot.
Oh.
Or at least made to look that way.
Yeah.
And so this scene sort of gets into that, but it is very much not all one continuous shot. We have, you know, plenty of breaks and cuts and things throughout this.
I mean, that's relative.
And I was
For the most part, the movie's breaks and cuts are caused by our main character getting knocked unconscious.
I mean, sometimes, but there's, like, before when he meets, like, the first Jimmy, it just sort of, they meet on the street, and then it cuts to him being in the car, and you're like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a couple of cuts here or there, but we do never leave the first-person perspective.
No.
The only time we ever get to see what Jimmy's face looks like, or Henry's face looks like, is when he gets knocked down and gets to see his own face in a mirror for a second.
Yeah, and that's not until the very movie.
Yeah, near the very, very end. But that's basically, just to give you an idea of how dedicated this is to the whole first-person gag. At this point, it's revealed that, unbeknownst to Henry, he's got a tracking device in his head and a camera feature.
Yeah, so he has been broadcasting everything that has been going on to Akan, which I guess goes in the theory that Akan is using all of this footage for his robos.
Yes. And this obviously pisses off Jimmy because this is his super secret laboratory. So he immediately goes in to try and kill Henry. Henry defeats him handily and is like, I'm not trying to... Oh, Bilbo Baggins. I am not trying to harm you, kind of shit. And then they team up to fight Akan's goons.
Yeah. And we get a wonderful little section of, you know, the various Jimmy's doing stuff where he, like, snipes dudes up on the roof with Sniper Jimmy, and then Sniper Jimmy, like, falls down and is no longer active, and Punk Jimmy is on the ground floor stabbing dudes with a katana. It's a, again, a neat use of the whole Jimmy character, the best thing in this movie.
It is also prefaced with one of the things that kind of bugged me about, because I already mentioned earlier that this movie doesn't have nearly enough, like, all the female characters are garbage.
Yep.
At the very beginning, right before Sniper Jimmy and Henry start shooting off the roof, Sniper Jimmy has to be like, oh, by the way, I know what you think you know about guys who like musicals and musical number. It is not true.
Yeah, okay. He has to very pointedly be like, know that I am not gay,
yeah,
even though I did a musical number.
Let me just quickly dispel the rumors of gayness. Here's a big old glass of not gay. And I'm like,
and,
why?
Well, because he's Sniper Jimmy. Obviously,
Sniper Jimmy's a fucking asshole.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess if he had been talking to the actual Basic Jimmy would have been like, look, I made like 5 gay ones. Let's be very realistic. I said the whole of human experience.
I definitely have gay Lothario Jimmy, and he is not in the building right now.
Yeah, he died earlier. But just so you know, there's definitely gay Jimmy somewhere. The Ballad of Gay Jimmy is a thing. But no, instead we have to get this, none of us is gay, right? Okay, let's shoot. And then they shoot a bunch of dudes, and eventually, I like that Sniper Jimmy is because he's just a clone, he's like, whatever, grabs 2 grenades and jumps off the roof to blow up one of the vans.
Well, yeah, because he's like, oh, they're close enough that being a sniper isn't going to help anymore, so hey, go help get the actual, you know, Jimmy Alpha out of here, and just, you know, jumps off the roof with some grenades.
See, I wouldn't have personally, I you know what, tactical decision, I get it. Also, it did a great job of showing that the Jimmys are full-on disposable. But it'd be like, you know what? It's just as functional as you jumping off a roof with two grenades. You throwing two grenades off the roof. They would have had the same effect. You could have just stored the spare up here in case you needed a sniper later.
But now the entire thing is a, like, running fight between floors as World War One Jimmy...
Again.
Alpha Jimmy and Nerd Jimmy, who didn't die earlier...
This is a different Nerd Jimmy.
On, who is the exact same person in the exact same
outfit.
I'm
remembering now. Leave me alone.
Are in an elevator going down through, like, the middle of the building. So Henry has to just murder everyone floor to floor so that they don't have a shot on this elevator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a great sequence where they're just killing goon after goon and jumping onto the elevator because it's like this descending thing in the center of a big wide archway as opposed to a regular elevator.
Oh, yeah.
So they're jumping onto it and jumping back off of it, and they're killing dudes left and right. And World War One General Jimmy is the best because he's just very straightforward about how all this works. There's all these lines where he's like, ah, if you can hear them, but you can't see them, you can probably grenade them, lad. Toss
Look,
an egg
I know
down there.
About war, lad.
Yeah. Toss an egg down there. We'll see what happens. And, you know, he's just fucking. He's fucking rad. He kills about a million people.
But yeah, they manage to, you know, get away from this eventually.
Yeah, and they do rig Jimmy's secret lab to blow, and they use that to escape the thugs in the end. Where they're like, ah, we're going to see your lab eventually. He's like, would you like to see it now? And yeah, then he drops it on top of them.
The top of a building on them.
Yeah, so pretty great.
Yep, this sets up our final assault on Akan's headquarters with our two remaining Jimmy decoys and regular Jimmy and Henry.
Mm-hmm.
They get into the building. Nerd Jimmy immediately grabs an axe and is like, I will buy you some time, and gets shot.
Mm-hmm. And I already said, goddamn. I thought that happened
I know,
in the brothel.
I can't let anything go.
You'll just learn to let go.
I cannot.
Anyway, yeah, he gets murdered. They do this really great assault on the building. I think my favorite part of the whole thing, though, is when they get to the building and there's all these vans arriving, and just one by one, as the vans arrive, they just casually blow them up.
Oh, yeah. I love, just like, they go around a corner, set up a grenade, like an explosive, and they're like, and van goes over it, boom.
Yeah. And then that just kind of continues happening to the point where the third van to get taken out is just World War One Jimmy goofing off with a bazooka.
It's very good.
It's good. And then they raid the building, and sadly, all the Jimmys die right away. They get killed and die off in an elevator that's taking them up to the floor that Akan lives. And we're done with Jimmy's.
Yes, and Jimmy's final act is to remove the memory blocker that they put on Henry so that he can start to get his memories back.
And we start
and
to see his memories.
Now it's time for him to fight a whole shitload of hymns.
Yeah, because they get up to the top floor and Akan's there and he's just like, oh, hello, just so you know, I made a bunch of you, and all of them wake up with their very first memory being the same thing that you had, like when your wife was screwing your leg back on, and they're 100% loyal to her, and she's told them to kill you.
Yep. And, you know, at first we get the 1v1 fight with just one huge, muscly Russian dude wakes up and they fight.
Mm-hmm.
And when he wins, he's like, ooh, he has an upgraded superpower pack, so I'll use that in me.
Yeah.
And he basically, I'm like, okay, but they also all have those.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. But they don't have his experience. Well, one of the things we learned throughout this movie is that they are disoriented and shitty when they first wake up, but then they get awesome over time, which means he's very awesome compared to they're not very awesome yet.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're all just sort of like, I basically just woke up from a coma and had someone tell me to go fight a dude.
Yeah, they're basically fighting like zombies at the beginning of this. This first one literally fights like friggin' Tor from Plan 9 from Outer Space. He's like, meet big, swing whole arm, and gets beaten up by having a bunch of broken glass thrown in his face over and over again. But now our Henry has the world's greatest power pack, so he's all like crazy upgraded. He goes up to the roof to try and catch Akan and Estelle, who were escaping in a helicopter. At this point, he knows Estelle was lying and that she's actually part of the whole bad guy plan. But he's still just really mad and trying to kill everybody anyway. And we have a giant, super burly fight on the roof.
Yep. And it's just a horde of dudes fighting our main guy, and he gets to kill them in various ways. He'll shoot them, he'll kick them off a roof, he'll blow them up, he'll mostly just punch them and kick them.
A lot of them get electrocuted, but eventually a whole bunch of them dive into a little building on the roof that he's filled with live grenades. And then he finally goes after
just a whole bunch of stuff.
He has to climb a bunch of scaffolding and shit. Eventually he goes after Akan, who's just flinging him back away with telekinesis. But there's a point where Akan dramatically reveals that he hasn't actually killed any of the other Henrys yet. They're robots. So he just orders them to get back up, and they do. And he shoots himself up with, this is main Henry, shoots himself up with double adrenaline and goes into hyperkill mode.
Yeah, which means that he actually has a circulatory system going, and he shoots into his legs. So you're like, all right, you gotta have blood pumping from your legs up to your head. And yet, you seem to have not been damaged at all in this way.
Well, you know, weird story. Did you know that all computers are also just pumped up by adrenaline?
Oh, yeah, totally.
You probably haven't tried
sometimes
this before.
Sometimes I like to overclock my computer by shooting adrenaline into it.
Yeah, you just shoot adrenaline directly into your disk drive, and it gets all kinds of crazy fast. That's a well-understood thing about computers and adrenaline in general. But no, he just adrenalines himself and fucks them all up, then finally manages to get a hand on Akon, who flings him away, but goes with him, because I guess his telekinesis is strong enough that even if he's carrying extra weight, he still gets flung back. And then he tears Akan's hand in half.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty gross
scene.
And
that's not
even
enough. He has to eventually rip the top of Akan's head off.
Yeah, he pulls out... This is where the movie goes full bio-borg mechanical fight. Henry pulls out his own eye, which is connected to the rest of his head with thick cables, wraps the cable around Akan's head so that it's in his mouth, and then tightens it to the point where it snaps the top half of Akan's head off. Then he football throws it into the escaping helicopter.
He gets into the escaping helicopter and is like, here, you know, here's Akan's head, Estelle.
Mm-hmm. And she's like,
Estelle gets super pissed off, shoots him.
And then when she tries to shoot him again, he deflects the bullet right back into her by just swinging at it with his metal hand.
Oh, yeah. And of course, the final thing is she's dangling from the edge of, like, the open door of this helicopter and is like, oh, Henry, please, you love me, save me. And he closes the door on her fingers.
Mm-hmm. And then right to credits.
Yep, that's it.
That's
the
whole
good thing. That manipulative bitch was killed.
Gotta kill that lady. Uh-huh. If you ain't got your tits out, you're dead. And actually, also, you're probably dead.
Probably.
God, does I mean, it's the same problem for the most part that the Crank movies had, where women tend to be kind of in the rearview mirror all the way through because your crazy main character has to go do crazy shit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, basically, all of the women in this are either for sex or evil.
But I gotta say, I much preferred in the first Crank movie where the main character woman was just like, fuck yeah, let's have sex on a horse track. I'm gonna look at a giant horse stick flying by. At least she had some agency. That was much better.
So yeah, there you go. Hardcore Henry, kind of, well, you know what? Let's go ahead and say our favorites and least favorites.
Sure. I'm going to say my favorite thing about this movie, and I know I'm going to set aside it as just sort of a given that the stunt work in this movie is phenomenal in terms of what they tried to do and accomplish doing. But in terms of watching it as a movie experience, my favorite thing were the little comedy bits in the missions. Mostly the scene where he just assumes he'll be able to grab a horse and get where he's going, and he just gets fucking rejected immediately. That shit had me laughing, and I was enjoying that.
Yeah.
What about you? What was your favorite thing?
I mean, as I said, Jimmy is the best thing in this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, specifically, the musical number is great. He gets to, you know, constantly shift in between his characters. It's very neat visually to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And it is sort of the culmination of that character. So, very good.
Plus, World War I Jimmy in particular is a complete standout. That was great.
So what would you say is your least favorite thing in this movie?
Well, I feel like I've hinted at it enough. This movie has one woman who's a bad guy, and then several women who are either tits or corpses, and that's the full extent of the female agency in this film.
Yes, indeed.
So I'm going to say that's definitely a major problem, and say it's my least favorite thing in this. What about you?
I mean, outside of that, honestly, it's the gimmick. The first person thing is like mentioned, occasionally used well, but mostly it's just disorienting, not useful, and honestly makes it less interesting to watch in a lot of circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating idea. I don't necessarily think that I would say it holds up the entire film.
No. That is outside of the fact that, you know, everything in this that has to do with women is terrible, the actual way that this is shot just makes this, it's just hard. It's hard to watch this for many a reason.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a visually disorienting movie.
Yep.
But
all right, let's go ahead and give our ratings, each of us from 0 to 5, to give the movie a rating out of 10. Jeff.
I'm going to give it a 3.5. Like, I actually more or less enjoyed my time watching this. Granted, it's got some really bad gender shit in it. But beyond that, like, this movie is a thrill ride, and it actually accomplishes that goal. So I'm going to go ahead and say a 3.5 is about right for me. I wouldn't actively seek it out, but it's a perfect Sunday morning type watch. And what about you?
I'm going to give it a 2.5. I just couldn't get over the way that it was filmed, the way that everything was set up. Like, Copley attempts to save this film, but honestly, a lot of that is because most of those scenes, Henry is just sort of static and, like, looking around slowly, and you can tell what's going on. You have some character development, you have something interesting to do, and the rest of it is just spinny, shaky cam, and I just don't think it looks interesting enough to give a shit about. So 2.5 for me.
All right.
I can't exactly recommend.
I don't know if we've had a 3.5, 2.5 split before. I bet people are going to tell us, though.
I bet.
I can't wait to find out. So there you go. 3.5.
Is this Scorigami?
What is that? A 6, I think? A 6 out of
3.5, 10. 3.5, 2.5?
Yeah.
Yep, that's a 6.
Woo!
6 out of 10. We've got a little differing opinion, but at least it shows up to be about, you know, watchable in the aggregate.
Yeah, that's pretty much, I would have said a 6 to 7 would have been perfectly fine out of 10 for me. I will take it and not be concerned.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for joining us on our journey through this first-person hardcore Henry journey.
Mm-hmm.
We, of course, will be back in another couple weeks with some more movie mastery, but in the meantime, we are just finishing up this episode of TV Mastery.
Yeah, this season
will be
of TV
the end
Mastery.
Of Smallville.
Oh, thank
so,
God.
So we are done with season one of Smallville. We are recording that. It'll be up for all of you donors on Patreon at patreon.com/systemmastery at the $5 level. You can get in. We've gone through the entirety of Smallville now, and we will announce what we are doing for our next season as well. And you'll be able to find that out as soon as you pay for it, you grubby little monsters.
We're going to keep it a secret? That's great.
Oh, I'll announce it once it gets posted.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
So thank you all. Again, go to patreon.com/systemmastery to help support us, keep the show running, keeps us doing what we're doing. And everyone out there, you have a good week. You stay safe, and you hug your loved ones, and you tell everyone around you, it's good to be here. Thank
yeah.
you.
Grab them. Grab them and hold on to them with your big, strong hands.
Yeah. I mean, they do seem like such big, strong hands. It would be the saddest thing in the world if something were to take them away from those big, strong hands.